Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. We have some fun. Well, I think they're fun. I don't know if this is. I don't know. We got a lot. I got a lot to talk about here.
Yeah. He hasn't told me what he's cooked up here.
I really haven't, but I think we'll talk about it right now, and we'll figure out where we're going with this. Okay. Wanted to talk about developing a team and putting a team together, like Nick Fury.
I'm putting a team together.
Did you get that one?
Yeah.
I think a couple people will, but basically. I think this was something I did well in K-Life, was taking a lot of people with differing opinions and views and everything else like on stuff together, and at least somewhat got them to work together. I think it's an important part of any team, of any organization, is to put together a group of people that's going to work well together. And so everything that I know is from an organization called Giant TV. They're really well done organization. The guy who runs the organization is a guy named Jeremy Kubicek. He's kind of been
shout out.
Jeremy has been doing this for a really long time. And he's got a business partner in the thing. They actually lived in the same house in England for a while together, which is kind of funny. But then they moved back to the States, started Giant, and they were a consulting agency that kind of focused on going into different businesses and consulting with them.
Okay.
Jeremy's written a book called The 10X Leader, 100X Leader or something. And the idea behind it is know yourself to lead yourself. So figure out where your strengths are, figure out where your weaknesses are, and then that allows you to lead yourself well, which then allows you to lead others well. Can't really lead yourself well if you don't know yourself. Big part of their thing, know yourself to lead yourself. Anyway, you are putting together a team at Hull right now in a lot bigger way. But I recently, and I don't know if you want to talk about this or not want to talk about this,
sure.
But you are moving back in a lot of ways where previously it would be like, well, we need Brent to do it. Well, we need Brent to do it. Well, we need Brent to do it. And now you're hiring out positions to get people to go do those things that you would have previously done. So, I mean, first off, how is that going? Do you want to fill everyone in on what that looks like? And I don't know, the struggles that you've had with it or successes you've had with it, or I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I just think it'd be helpful for other people to be like, oh, cool, yeah, I'm dealing with that, or maybe not.
Sure. You know, I'm year 30, going into 32 or 33. Just the trajectory and you know, highs and valleys of you know, owning and running a business means that, you know, when I got out of North Bennett Street, I thought I was going to go work for somebody. I ended up not, and I ended up starting my company, my brother's garage. I've never worked for anybody else, okay? I was a teacher at a boarding school in Connecticut, and so I technically worked under somebody, headmaster there, but I didn't really have a boss. I was in the restaurant business. I was I did things like that. And so
shuck and jive.
Just never had a quote-unquote boss. Never been part of a big culture, never part of, you know, don't know what an HR person looks like, don't know what a CFO looks like, I can read about it and understand that how those people fit in. But until the last little bit, I didn't understand how all those things came together. What's happened over the last few years is that we've started growing at a pace with needs that we've never had before. And so I've had to hire managers to come lead those companies. The first manager we hired was over the shop, and we, you know, stumbled and failed our way through some managers, some good, some bad, till we finally landed on this guy, Kevin, who's really doing a good job. And, you know, in that position, we had to hire somebody who, up until that point with our shop, the best craftsman always was the leader, right? Mm-hmm. He had the most experience, he had done the most jobs, and he was the one leading. We had a guy for a while who was leading it. He's just a nasty person. And he was a English guy who...
Don't get too specific.
He was an English guy who basically was a great craftsman, but just kind of an asshole. And come to find out, he was leading the shop in a way that it was just like, you know, I don't want you talking to people that way. I don't want to hear about outbursts. I don't want you to hear about you blaming other people for mistakes. And so point being is that there were some bad fits culturally that we had, that we were just trying to, you know, that's not right for our culture. And so we stumbled through trying to figure out how do I put someone in charge to lead that team with the character that I feel is important and that understands profitability, that understands craft, that understands, you know, the artistry of what we're doing, but also knows we have to make money at the end of the day. And so that was hard. That was hard to try to find that.
So let's just jump in right here, because I think there's a lot of resources that we should give people that I think we're going to forget on if we don't like stop and immediately jump in. Really good book that I've read, that you've read, that we recommended on the Kevin Jarvis episode. It's called The E-Myth Revisited, The E-Myth Revised.
Revisited.
And basically the idea behind this book is the E-Myth, the entrepreneurial myth, is that every single, or it's 70%, 90% of every business, small business that starts up will fail. And it's reviewing why will those businesses fail. And it's kind of exactly what you just described in a lot of ways, where the idea behind the best craftsman in the shop is going to lead the shop. Well, the best craftsman in the shop, if that's true, should be a craftsman. They shouldn't be necessarily leading the shop. Maybe they have those skills to transfer, and maybe they should start doing that, and maybe they're like a really skilled craftsman, and then they should get into that as well. But a lot of times, what you want to have is you want to have someone who's administratively gifted lead a shop, because they're going to be organizing. We have this job coming up. We have this timing coming up. We have this amount of time to go through the things. They need to be able to look at a spreadsheet and identify that and parse through that. A craftsman isn't necessarily the person who's going to do that. Now let's take it away from.
No, it's a good point. And we talked about, you know, that where I stood as far as in my class at North Bennett Street is Brian McCraft. There was better craftsmen than me, but they probably couldn't lead the company that I'm leading. But, you know, and so they
And on top of that, not just, I wouldn't just leave it at they couldn't lead the company that you're leading. They probably don't want to.
Good point.
Like they probably want to be doing something that has their hands in the wood, you know, and not necessarily.
Yeah. And people. They may think they want to run the company, but really they're going to be most happy. And a lot of guys in our shop are older men who are at that point in their life. They're like, look, I don't want to have the headaches of running the business. I know what I'm good at, and I'm going to stay here.
Which is awesome.
Which is great.
I think one of the things that you really encounter in the American culture is there's this idea and attitude that like the leader is the best and the leader is the winner and the, you know, all this stuff. And there's like financial things that get buried into that where everyone's like, no, because they're the leader, they're making the most money, they're doing all this. But it's often like, you know, you've got to really want to run a company in order to go run a company because of how many headaches come with it and how many.
Well, if we take it to the builder world,
as
you get out as a trim carpenter or craftsman, like I was, I always looked at the builder as being like, that's the job you want.
Right.
A lot of those builders that I've come to find out are knuckleheads. Like they couldn't design their way out of a paper bag. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means, but they're
design a knife.
They're morons when it comes to traditionalism or craft or beauty, but they're risk takers. Mm-hmm. They don't mind the risk. They are able to navigate because they don't have traditionalism and classicism and craftsmanship is part of their, you know, stumbling blocks. They just blow right through them.
Right.
Ended up building houses that, you know, they may or may not make a lot of money, but in any case, to your point, I don't want craftsmen looking at the builder going, oh, well, that's the job you want to attain. Mm-hmm. I really want, you know, us building beautiful things and, you know, considering all of those things as we make decisions anyway.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a big part of the E-Myth is you've got to focus on, hey, what do you want to be doing? And then how can we make those goals, you know, function? And I think the same way as a business owner, you've got to be thinking about that for your employees in a lot of ways, more so than like, because I think the way that we've built up this culture is like, you just have to, if you want to do something, you've got to go do it and you've got to fight to go do it. And if you're not making enough money, you need to either switch jobs or you need to whatever. Whereas I think you can design a business and you can run a business to where people are very satisfied in the work that they're doing. And then you can create a culture as a boss to give people the opportunity to go, hey, I want to take more initiative in this realm. Can I try something in that? And I think this will provide benefit to the company. And then, you know, if you've got a good boss, they will evaluate that, go, is this something that we are trying to go for? Like if someone came up to you and said, I think we need to really start a good electronics installation company side of Hull, you would probably go, I don't think we need that as a side of our business because it's not, but if you want to go start another, you know, electronics business, go for it. But if they came to you and were like, I really want to work on the 100-year door and I want to start establishing a 100-year door, you would be able to go, that's something we need, or maybe we don't need, show me why we need it. That makes sense. That's a good with example. Our thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think there's a lot of pride involved too in the world of owning a business, and you want to be like the final say, you want to have the ideas. I'm speaking about me personally. Like,
I think early in my career, I wanted that, but not necessarily something that's,
I think that's rare. I just after what I've seen from working with people, and I think a lot of people want to be the one who came up with the idea, who never made any mistakes, who, you know, I think that's the standard. Like, and so I think it takes a lot of humility as a business leader to be able to go to one of your people and say, hey, if anyone has any great ideas, I'm open to hearing them. Or, hey, we're going with Kevin's idea because he's just came up to me and said he wants to start this initiative. We're going to try it out. We're going to see where it goes. You know,
I think some of the things that you're talking about, leaning around, are things that for me took time for me to figure out, right? And took losing, you know, took missing, and took, you know, failure to try to get to the point. For one, I was talking to a guy the other day about, you know, leadership and kind of what the most important part of leadership and building a team is. You know what his answer was?
What?
What do you think?
Failure.
No, he said, I was asking him specifically, when you're building your team, what's the most important thing you're trying to convey?
When you're you're building a team? I don't know. I would say humility.
Well, he said culture. He said your job is to, you know, build a culture and build an attitude of, you know,
That's exactly what I'm about to talk about. This is
what you're about and what you believe, so that culture is, you know, so that everybody else understands that culture. And what I'm trying to do, if you ask my people, you know, beauty, excellence, you know, those are these things. And
the whole core values, if you will.
Exactly. And so. Anyway, you know, we're talking about kind of how to build a team and kind of where you fit in that thing. I found that really interesting.
Yeah.
The other thing, the other anecdotal story is I'm talking to a guy who has a great business up in Boston. He's getting ready to retire. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, well, how do I do this? Do I do an ESOP? An ESOP is an employee ownership program, basically, where you basically sell the company to the employees and they pay out the debt. The problem with an ESOP is that you can saddle them with a lot of debt,
right,
to buying you out, that could put them in a difficult situation. And he did. He had a company come in and they interviewed all their employees, and their employees said, can we not just kind of keep the ship going exactly the way it's going? Does it have to all fall apart now that he leaves?
Yeah.
And they basically wanted the standard quo.
Yeah.
They wanted, you know, can we not just keep doing this?
Yeah.
I suspect that's exactly what would happen if you asked my guys out of the shop.
Yeah.
They don't want necessarily to own the company.
Right.
A few of them might, but most of them want to, can we just not just keep going along the way we are? So they're trying to manage through that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, exactly that. So I guess I jumped to humility because I thought you were saying as a boss, what do they want necessarily?
Oh, I see.
What are they looking for? But I see what you mean. Culture is huge. So there's I'm just kind of jumping all over the place a little bit, but where were we talking about before this?
Well, I was telling you about building a shop the first managers out there and kind of the guy that we have now is a guy who isn't a mill worker, right? Yeah. And we specifically ended up hiring a guy because of the past experience. you know, stumbling over guys who were the best craftsmen leading the shop,
right,
going, you know what, maybe that's not really what we need. What we need is someone who understands business and who can help. And so now I've got a guy who's a real team builder. He's a good leader. And he has spent the last 2 years, year and a half, really working hand in hand with the guys, solving problems, you know, everyday problems, putting out the fires, doing all that stuff. But now my mandate, okay, is you've experienced the challenges that the shop's facing on the work that we're doing.
Yeah.
I need you to step away from that. I actually need you to, I don't want you going into the office 2 days a month, because I want you staying home, building budgets, building schedules, planning, so that you don't get sucked into that, you know, that fire in that world. And you're actually,
you're not putting out fires. You're just prepping for the future. You're exactly. Working on, that makes sense.
You're proactive, not reactive.
Right. Which is all like great. So I guess we're talking about hiring someone to like lead. I guess when you're looking at the attributes of what you want in a leader, there's a book. I'm going to reference a lot of Patrick Lencioni books, because I think he's got a really good handle on business. A lot of his core values are like aligned with my core values. But I think when you look at a great business leader, they did a study on what you want a boss to be. And it was like 90% of the answers were humble. They wanted a humble boss. Everyone wanted a humble boss. Like the competent was mixed in there. Smart was mixed in there. Go-getter. Like there are a lot of like good words, but like most of the people among their list had humble, like 90% of them or something.
Interesting.
Which was very funny, because humility isn't necessarily something you think of when you think of like a leader or like a commander or a general or something like that. But I think it's a quality that gets reflected really well on employees, or it leaves a really good lasting impression if you don't have an arrogant leader who doesn't own up when they make a mistake, who doesn't, whatever it may be.
Sure.
Just kind of continues to forge forward. And I say all this as someone who really struggles with being a humble leader, but it is what it is. You know a lot of what you can't do necessarily, so trying to figure it out. Anyway, there's this book, Patrick Lencioni. The book is called The Ideal Team Player, and it talks about these three kind of triangles that you've got, or three, it's a Venn diagram, triple head Venn diagram. You want someone who is humble, hungry, and smart, basically. So someone who smart, knows the field, knows what they're doing, has competency around it. Hungry, go-getter.
Ambitious.
Ambitious, is not going to just whatever. And then humble, someone who, whatever, because kind of without the, like when you parse them into groups of two, it's fine, but you're missing a core element. You need all three of those for someone to be an ideal team player. And it applies to the leader. It applies to the people on the team. It applies to everyone. And so I think you need that as like a core. I think everyone on your team needs to either at least buy into those ideas of, I'm trying to be each one of these things. And it's not necessarily IQ smart. It's more just like aptitude, general aptitude within the field that you're in. So there's that. I think that's a super helpful resource. I think it's super good. The real building a team piece that I want to get into is taking a good leader, someone who is those three things, someone who is humble, someone who recognizes what they need on their team. I want to jump into this idea of the five voices. So this is a thing developed by Giant TV. It's been supremely helpful on everything. I say it's Giant TV. Giant.tv is the website that you go to check it out. And it's been really helpful for us. We had a lot of team dynamic problems in K-Life, and this was an incredibly helpful tool in us like getting a common language around our team. More than anything, just helping to discuss why we are a bunch of different people working together for a common thing. Because give 100 people a different problem, they're all going to attack it from a different way, or some are going to approach it the same, some are going to approach it differently. Anyway, so this idea behind the five voices is everyone has an order of these voices and how they approach different problems. And so the five voices are pioneer, connector, guardian, creative, and nurturer, okay? And so it has a population breakdown of all of them, but if we're going to jump into one, let's just pull up. Yeah, so there's the nurturer. This is the most common one, 43% of the population are the nurturer. The best way of thinking about these voices is how you show up in a meeting, I think is like probably the best way of thinking about it. Because as meetings take place, as ideas are formed, you want to hear from everyone on your team and you want to make sure everyone has a voice in the conversation, but some people may speak up differently than you're hoping or expecting they do. So their strengths and weaknesses are up there, but basically they are caring about others. And that could be other people in the room. That could be the client. That could be whatever. That's their strength, is defending other people. That's what they do. They always ask, has this been thought through? They've got the quietest voice, all right? So I think the best is that snapshot at the bottom right there. They're a champion of people, relational harmony, and values. You got to watch out for them. They fear conflict, and they don't often speak out. And just if they're being quiet, it's either they don't feel comfortable enough to share their idea, or they're not, you know, in the zone.
Or so, they don't agree.
Maybe they don't agree. Maybe there's another voice in the room that's overpowering them. They don't feel like they have a chance to speak up. Or maybe they do agree and they're just being quiet. But you just have to check in with the nurturer, because they won't check in. They won't speak up for themselves. And it's 43% of the population have that as their leading voice. So it's more often than you think they kind of get steamrolled and rolled over. So you just gotta head out there. The next one is the creative. This is another quiet voice. This is the next quietest voice on the, or the next loudest voice on the list.
9%
of the population have this as their first voice. So I know this is kind of a lot of information overload, but I think it's really helpful, and it has helped us create a really great team. So just bear with me if you can. But
sure.
Everyone has all five of these voices. It's just how they appear in your presentation. So for myself, we'll get to it. It's a pioneer. It's the loudest voice. It's probably going to be last. But I always talk really loud in meetings. So often the first to share my idea, often it's my way or the highway, is the feeling that I give off to others. And so I really have to do a good job checking myself, making sure that everyone's on the same page before continuing, because it makes me a worse leader by doing that, or a worse member of the team if I'm like, all right, we're going to do this. But, you know, another downfall of the pioneer is I typically have a hard time wanting to do someone else's idea, or not speaking up if there's something that I would consider stupid in someone else's idea. So I've got to learn to check those things and kind of help figure it out. But the creative, not necessarily a creative person. Like they don't necessarily have to be artsy to be a creative, but they love innovation, future ideas, organizational integrity. And then you got to watch out, because they can struggle to communicate effectively and have perfectionist tendencies. It's not necessarily that they aren't willing to communicate. It's more often they're so internal up here that they don't have a really easy time getting it out there, right? So the next one is the guardian. It's 30% of the population. They are like your administrative guru, right? They're like super organized, super to a T, in a similar way to the nurturer often is as well, but this person just more so. In team meetings, this person's going to show up in a way where if, like me as a pioneer, I had a guardian on my team, and anytime I presented a new idea, I'm like a thinker, a visionary. I love to come up with a new initiative. Guardians are often hesitant whenever a pioneer's in a room, because they're like, you want to start a new idea? No. We've got a system in place. We've got things that are going on. Okay, let's play with your new idea. And they ask like 50 bajillion questions, and they often try and like machine gun poke holes in your idea. And if it stands up, the guardian's a fearful defender or a fearless defender of that idea. They're like, I'm in on this. I am like sold out. But if they're not, it kind of, they hate the idea, and if they can find holes in it. So that's their strengths. They're risk averse. And so, and they bring a lot of critique, and they're pretty negative. So I'll finish the next one, and then I'll go into why this matters. Connector, 11% of the population. This is your, I know a guy person. So they're often like, they can help bring people together. They're wheeling and dealing. I look at this as like a really good quality for like maybe a project manager who, you know, gets stuff done on the site. Maybe they themselves are not getting it done, but they are rallying people to a cause to get them to go get something done. So relational networks, internal collaboration, and effective communication. That's what they love. And then watch out for connectors always interpret challenge of their ideas as personal. So if a connector comes up with an idea and you're like, have you thought about this? The connector's like, oh, they hate me. I can't believe they didn't like my idea. And then how to empower them, give them time to share their ideas and appreciate before you create, critique. And then the last one is Pioneer. Champion of strategic vision, results focused, and problem solving. Pioneer's lack of sensitivity can be unwilling to listen and perceived as arrogant often. So that's kind of my struggle. This is me to a T. Don't worry. They empower themselves. Just affirm their competence is what it says for how to empower them. So I guess the biggest thing with Pioneers is they can be really problematic in a team, but in the right circumstances, they can be exceptional. How does this play out? How does this matter? How does this come together? The reason this works is everyone figures out, so you take your executive team, right? So you get you and the guy head of your shop, head of homes, behind the scenes, like you get all those people together in a room. You work through all these ideas and you learn who is what, and you figure out like, how do you guys respond to each other? And all this does, it's so much time and it's so much work and it takes all this stuff, but what it does is it gives you a common language and a framework to know who is on your team and how everyone responds. And what happens is when you go through this, your inner team conflict, instead of taking months to resolve, turns into taking days to resolve, sometimes hours to resolve, because you start to know the other people and you're willing to step across a line and go, okay, I hear what you're saying. I know for my team, it was really helpful for them to know this is what I am like, because all of a sudden they could show grace whenever I was being annoying and I was like, I've got a new idea and it was my seventh new idea of the week. How are we going to get more kids involved in K-Life? We're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Kristen, my guardian, she would go, all right, stop. Let's figure out how we're going to do these things. And it was like, great. And I'm not offended that she's slowing me down, slowing down the momentum, which is one of the things that, you know, you get a problem with or like whatever. So I'm now, oh, she's a guardian. She's asking some really important questions. We need to stop and consider what she's thinking about. And then pivot over to Natalie, who's a nurturer, and we can go, she's going to see how other people perceive this. She's going to see how the homeowner, the client, how do we get an outward focus? So I think Brittany, she's probably a nurturer or a connector or something, because I think she does a really good job of seeing how your homes are perceived. Her putting together a welcome packet for every new homeowner that you build a home for, that's a genius idea, one that I would never think of, because I'm like, let's just build a great home. Let's just fix it and let's make it great. But she's all of a sudden bringing a new perspective on the team. But for me, not knowing that about Brittany, I'm like, that's so pointless. What a waste of time. Homeowner just wants a home. They don't want a packet on their home. They want the thing. Anyway, I'm trying to paint a picture because I think what this does is it breaks down your team into very tangible roles. And then everyone knows the role that the other people play. And then you can start to fight for, you know, oh, they said something in a meeting. We need to actually listen to what they're saying. We need to listen to what they're bringing up because we don't think that way, or we do think that way. Anyway, I've seen a lot of success in this system. I've seen a lot of success, not only my business, but also in our marriage, Natalie and I's marriage. We use these tools because it's like so helpful in breaking things down. I think this is just a wildly helpful tool in creating a team together, in creating that team unity. Because it's really hard whenever you're walking into a meeting with someone and you know the team with you, you've just gotten out a huge infighting team fight where you're like, I blew up because I was upset that someone did this. Now it's, hey guys, I blew up. I'm sorry. I had a, you know, frustrating moment in that meeting. I really just want to accomplish this goal. This is where I'm coming from. Then all the other people go, yeah, no, you're not thinking about this. And it's like, you're right. I'm not thinking about that. We're going to figure this out. Now we've short-circuited a lot of those conflicts that are preventing you from actually doing the cool work that you get to do. So anyway, big fan of this. I think it's a super helpful resource. Giant Worldwide, I think, is their new logo. Whatever. Great company. Has a lot of these tools. A lot of them are free. A lot of them are available online. So really helpful for me. The other things that I think were instrumental in creating that culture of success were Patrick Lencioni's book called Death by Meeting. Really good book. I think meetings are the bane of a lot of people's existence. And like I'm saying, a lot of these examples are used from team meetings because that's where a lot of the internal team conflict comes about. And so death by meeting does a lot. It creates a structure basically for you to use a template for how to do. We're going to do a big stand or a daily stand-up meeting. It's 5 minutes, but we take all the department heads, we talk together, then we move forward. And then a monthly everyone meeting, it's once a month, it's an hour, but it's good because we all get on the same page. That's a really helpful book. Anyway, so I'll leave it there. I don't know. I've been talking too long. What are you thinking?
I think you're describing how to get along with people, how to know yourself, how to get the most out of your team. My brand manager, she and I butt heads a little bit in a good way.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I didn't know myself and I didn't know her, I could take great offense at that. And there's times I did take offense to that. She doesn't respect me. And in truth, she is like what you're describing. She's thinking about other aspects that I don't think about.
Right.
And so I couldn't do what I do without her. Right. Yeah. And so she makes me better. And understanding that my idea needs to be considered with the backdrop of how your clients really are going to appreciate that, mm-hmm. or how that's really helping is invaluable. So, I mean, you're describing something that took me a long time to learn is just how to consider other things. I mean, yeah. part of what I've learned in this time is that I don't know everything, there's a lot of tools that are out there that I'm not familiar with. Yeah. So
I think one of the things also about this that I looked at first, like they introduced this to us. They're like, we recommend all your teams to start to use this tool. And I was like, all right, I'll follow your orders, but I'm not like jazzed about this. This is a waste of time. There's so many other things I could be doing. And I think what I noticed was on the back end, how much benefit we gained from it without realizing it on the front end. You know, we are in meetings every day with people. You butt heads every day with people on your team. But then if you have this common language to just be able to pause and go, hey, let's figure this out. Why are you like this? Why am I like this? Because people don't want to do that. And a lot of times the conflict, the best way to handle it is you bottle it down. You push it aside. You go, I'm not going to face this right now. It's just tense between us right now. It'll fade. It's whatever. But whether it's your client, whether it's someone you're working with, whether it's whatever, the quiz itself takes 30 minutes. And then just talking about sitting down and talking about it takes an hour. But then you're set for the rest of your career. And so anyway, and they've got tons of resources and modules that I think are wildly important for the success of a company. But it's daily that you encounter these stressors that don't need to be stressors because, like you're saying, she makes the company better, you know? And like, I just think of Kristen, the girl I was working with, we completely butted head on so many things. But then whenever we revealed this, like it got added the second year we were working together. And so when I started studying it, I was like, she makes so much sense to me now why she's asking these questions. And then it became, it's not about me anymore. It's more about our team and how are we going to be perceived to our clients, you know, to the families that we serve. And it changes it from a we're the best approach to like a humble approach of we just want to do our best work, you know, flips it on its head. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at all the tools out there and there are a lot of business, you know, team building tools, it does seem to come down to most people want a humble boss. Mm-hmm. They want someone who listens to them. They want someone who considers them, who, you know, doesn't bully them. And so what you just described, you know, that your perspective and your growing allowed you to see that it wasn't about you.
Yeah.
That it was, you know, about this team perception. Yeah. So I think it's good. It's good. I don't know enough about this system to comment. So I'm a little bit like, okay, yeah, no, that sounds like a good system.
Yeah. Well, that's the main team building like tool I would say that I recommend. But you're right. I think it just comes down to the fundamentals of know yourself, know what you're like. Are you humble? Are you willing to change? Are you willing to, you know, pursue this? And then are you hiring the right people around you? What job are you performing? You know?
Well, the book I used was Traction. Mm-hmm. And as far as, you know, getting our business to the next level. You know, it talks about, you know, setting priorities, setting rocks. It talks about, you know, do you have the right people in the right places? And, you know, I feel like right now, if you have our three pieces of the business, the homes construction piece, the millwork, and then the design department, I've got great leaders and the right leaders in each position.
Right.
And since I have the right leaders, then I know working through stuff like this, you know, we know that everybody, we just had a team building meeting yesterday where we went to lunch and it was a long lunch. We rented a room or got a room at the local restaurant that we could have by ourselves. And we were there for about 2 hours, had lunch and just talked about things, got to know each other, got to respond to the different departments and, you know, kind of what their background was. They each got to say a little bit about themselves, what their challenges are. And then we set 1 year and 5 year goals.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was an early, I didn't expect anything groundbreaking to come out of it except for us to get to know each other. And so that when we come together again, we could go, how are you doing, you know, accomplishing that? How can I help? You know, the three companies are very synergistic in that the design company, if they do their job well, will set up homes to do better work for the client and then bring in the mill shop to complement that they can all work pretty closely together.
Right.
And so I think, you know, it's still early for us, but, you know, having managers over each of the different things is new for me. It's new. And so, you know, it's in the last year that this has happened. And so it's kind of a new phase of, I think, growth for us. And it's a new phase of opportunity and leadership. And then quite frankly, you know, what I was telling them is like, look, I've never done this before.
Yeah.
And I don't know what this looks like. But I do want us to all get better. And we have my brand manager who thinks about, you know, how the public, I mean, she's all about, she's wanting to send surveys out. She wants to understand customer satisfaction.
Yeah.
That makes me anxious. Like makes me like, you know, the problems that could come up with that. I don't want to even know. I just
want. And if you ask a guy 10 years later where he's had one failure in the last 5 days and you're like, he's going to give a different answer than, you know, the 10 years that he's already had the home.
So, yeah, true. And so anyway, my prayer, my work is to try to be that humble leader, right?
Yeah.
To be that guy who is quiet and patient and humble. And so it doesn't come easy for me because I'm a pretty arrogant guy.
Aren't we all? The other interesting thing part about it too is your brand manager wants to do it because she sees if we just ask the people, we're going to get way better than rather than just trying to guess what they want done better. And you're seeing it as like, oh, it's a poor reflection on us and whatever. And
yeah. I mean, I also see it is that we're trying to put processes in. One thing that came away from that meeting was that the thing we want to focus on this year is processes, making sure that this follows by this so we're not reinventing the wheel every time. And she's wanting to include the customer in that. And it makes me anxious.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I, in no small part, because currently, if you don't include the customer in that, you can take a step back and look at your work and go, we did an awesome job by every standard that I have for myself. And then all of a sudden you bring a customer into it and they're nitpicky about whatever detail that maybe you don't care about in terms of design. But the customer satisfaction
a
point.
Fair point, yeah.
So it just is another weird thing to consider.
Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for watching this episode of the Passion for Craft podcast, and we'll see you in the next one.